Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Health and Safety Matters podcast. My name is Mark Sennett. I'm the CEO of Western Business Media, which is the publisher of Health and Safety Matters. And as always, this podcast is sponsored by the Health and Safety Event. And as we publish this today at the end of April, please come along to the Health and Safety Event, which is taking place this week, funnily enough, at the NEC in Birmingham. And it's co-located alongside the Fire Safety Event and also the Security Event and the Workplace Event. And that's taking place Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday this week, so the 30th of April all the way through till the 2nd of May. It's completely free to attend and it is the UK's biggest health and safety exhibition. There's going to be over 45,000 people there. And you can come and see us on the Health and Safety Matters stand, which is co-located on the same stand as the British Safety Industry Federation. Do come along and see us there. We're looking forward to seeing all of you at the show. It should be a fantastic few days. Now, as I always say, you do not have to wait until this podcast comes out to get all the latest health and safety news in the sector. You could go to our website. Now, if you can't remember our web address, don't panic. It is hsmsearch.com. If you can't remember that, don't worry. Just go into a search engine and type Health and Safety Matters and up we come. But if you want to know reasons to go to the website, well, I've said, obviously, the latest news, prosecutions, and products and services are on there. But there's a whole lot more. You can click on the webinars tab in the top part of the navigation on the website. You can see all of our upcoming CPD webinars and watch all of our past webinars on demand. You can also see all the latest and back editions of Health and Safety Matters on there for free. Sign up to get copies of Health and Safety Matters 6 times a year alongside the PP Insights Guide and the BSIF Annual Guide to UK Health and Safety, which comes up annually every December. And you can obviously sign up to get our weekly e-newsletter along with 50,000 other people in the health and safety profession in the UK. So please do that. Failing that, you can of course follow us on X or LinkedIn. Just search for Health and Safety Matters on X or on LinkedIn and you can get everything that you need there. But as always, we start with the news on this podcast and always keen for your feedback, though I should say, please do give feedback on this podcast on social media using the hashtag HSM podcast. So, okay, what have we got as the news on this edition of the podcast? Well, I always quite like to cover this when it comes out. And if you go to our website in the news section, you will see something that says non-registered PPE providers failing BSIF tests. So the BSIF, which is the British Safety Industry Federation, has issued a warning to those overseeing PPE and safety product procurement after its latest tests on non-member products highlighted the widespread availability of substandard and even dangerous items. It's something we cover quite a bit on here because the BSIF are so rigorous at testing stuff to make sure it's compliant. So between December 2022 and December 2023, the BSIF examined 123 non-member products, assessing advertised performance, marking adequacy and compliance within those standards. Shockingly, only 21%, that's 26 products, proved fully compliant, leaving a staggering 79%, and that's 97 products, that fell short of the testing criteria. Worryingly, many of these substandard products are still available and in use, posing serious risks to unsuspecting users. This is a serious issue. So, some examples of the products that the non-BSIF registered members failed on the testing was including a flame retardant parker bought from an on-time retailer. During the flame spread testing, the outer layer burnt through, exposing the inner layer, which then caught fire, resulting in the entire coat being consumed by flames. The garment also lacked the correct documentation and markings in line with the PPE regulation requirements. A pair of safety boots was also tested from the same retailer, and it failed the toe cap compression tests. They were all over 10 years old and supported the outdated certification. Didn't have any correct documentation and were not correctly marked. Elsewhere, a pair of safety spectacles acquired from a high street retailer failed an impact resistance test, with lenses cracking and breaking when struck by a projectile. The spectacles also lacked marking and required documentation, so that wasn't there. So despite promises to remove the product from sale, it's still available over 2 months later, the BSIF has revealed. Three pairs of protective gloves from a high street retailer failed testing against abrasion and returning just half of the claimed performance level. They were also incorrectly marked and missing the required documentation. When contacted by the BSIF, the retailer said that they would take action, but the products are still on sale 4 months later. So meanwhile, under a respiratory protection mark, an FFP3 purchased from a PPE distributor performed at only half the required level, during filter penetration tests against contaminants and had missing documentation. When contacted, the distributor didn't act to remove the product from sale or initiate a recall. So, non-member tests results findings are a sharp contrast to the result of tests conducted by BSI have registered safety supplier scheme members. So that's what we mean by non-members. It's people that are not part of the BSIF registered safety supplier scheme. Something we talked about at length on this podcast. And, you know, we would always say to you, only acquire products that have met the criteria of the registered safety supplier scheme run by the BSF. And people that are on that scheme are committed to only selling certified PPE and training honestly and ethically. And of the 348 tests completed on products on the Registered Safety Suppliers Scheme members between 2022 in December and December 2023, that's 91%, that's 315 products passed immediately. Now, even the 9%, the 33 products that didn't pass initially, all these issues were promptly addressed and rectified. So if you are looking for PPE and you're looking for quality PPE that meets the requirements and the standards, you need to make sure it has the BSIF shield marked on it. And that means it's part of a registered safety supplier scheme. And if you want more details on the registered safety supplier scheme, go to www.registeredsafetysupplierscheme.co.uk or just throw into a search engine BSIF registered safety supplier scheme. So commenting on the latest results, BSIF CEO Alan Murray, a regular guest on this podcast, has said, "Our latest test results show that you don't have to look very far to find examples of inadequate substandard PPE and safety equipment for sale in the UK. Shockingly, many unsuspecting users are relying on these compromised products for their safety. Buyers and specifiers must urgently review their procurement processes and consider what assurances they have that the PPE and safety equipment that they're being supplied is fit for purpose. Checking for the BSIF Registered Safety Supplier Scheme shield is the easiest way to ensure that the stuff that you acquire is compliant, competent, and from trustworthy suppliers." So, as I said at the start of this news story, completely echo those words from Alan Murray. If you want to ensure that you're acquiring or procuring PPE that is compliant and does what it's meant to do and adhere to the relevant standards, then make sure you acquire only from someone that is on the BSIF Registered Safety Supplier Scheme. Right, moving on to our next story. And if you're on our website, you can read this in full. It's titled, "Poll Shows Building Maintenance Professionals Prioritising Safety." So, this poll shows that over two-thirds, that's 70% of maintenance professionals, state that staying compliant is the most significant problem in their business. And this is a recent poll done by SFG20. So, just after half of those who were surveyed for the report said that meeting safety standards is their biggest priority in 2024. However, the poll of respondents, 100% of those surveys remain unsure about how prepared they are to comply with the new Building Safety Act and the Golden Thread requirements for facilities managers. That is staggering. 100% said they remain unsure how prepared they are. So that is a terrifying statistic. But constantly remaining compliant can be overlooked when maintenance budgets and strategies face rising costs of materials of labour. As the focus on compliance highlighted in the Building Safety Act grows, facilities managers are required to keep on top of their legal responsibilities whilst also pinpointing potential hazards, including electrical, structural and fire safety to prevent dangerous incidents and to protect people and valuable assets. So commenting on the results of the poll, Paul Bullard, who's a product director at SFG20, said, "Understanding your statutory responsibilities as a facilities manager and the consequences of non-compliance is imperative. Not only does non-compliance increase the risk of legal consequences and sanctions, but it will likely lead to avoidable added costs, such as increased insurance premiums and damaged reputation." So, building maintenance is no longer a backseat issue for organisations, says SFG20, but the cornerstone of health and safety and efficient running costs. A fix-on-fall approach might work for non-statutory maintenance, they say, but the approach can mean statutory tasks are not completed, creating significant risk to both building owners and occupants. So we get a lot of research centres here at Health and Safety Matters, and obviously this covers the facility management sector and the health and safety sector as well. But it's quite rare that we get something quite sensationalistic as these stats that come through, to say that over two-thirds of maintenance professionals are saying that compliance is the most significant problem for them in a business is a concern, and 100% of those in the poll remaining unsure how prepared they are to comply with the Building Safety Act and Golden Thread requirements is staggeringly high statistics. It was just something I wanted to share with you, because it just the pure level of these figures caught me off guard for something that I've talked a lot about in our sister publication, Fire Safety Matters, and the Fire Safety Matters podcast. We've talked about the ramifications of the Building Safety Act and the new Fire Safety Act as well, because those are the first two new pieces of legislation in the fire sector since 2005, when the Regulatory Reform Fire Safety Order came into force. So it was an interesting survey. You can read more about all of this online. Go to hsmsearch.com, throw into the search engine on the website, poll shows building maintenance professionals are prioritising safety. So what else have we got for you? Well, let's go to a much more national level story now, and it's titled "The Prime Minister Launches Retail Crime Crackdown." You may have seen this in the news, and it's all about protecting retail workers. So the story, as we've said here, says assaulting a retail worker will be made a standalone criminal offence, sending a clear message that there will be tougher consequences for this unacceptable behaviour. So perpetrators could be sent to prison for up to 6 months, receive an unlimited fine, and be banned from going back to the shop where they committed their crimes, with criminal behaviour orders barring them from visiting specific premises. Breaching an order is also a criminal offence and carries a 5-year maximum prison sentence. For the most serious cases of assault, such as causing grievous bodily harm with intent, offenders could face a life sentence. The move to create this new offence follows long-standing campaigning on this issue from Matt Vickers MP and some of the biggest retailers calling for more action to better protect their staff. Yeah, we have covered on here before the dangers not only of lone working for retail staff, or just staff in general. There's no scenario where it is okay for someone to go to work and be assaulted, let alone in retail premises. And this is obviously something that has, as we said, that Matt Vickers has long campaigned for. The government is also stepping up action to clamp down on offenders who repeatedly target country's high streets, with serial offenders forced to wear tags to track their movements. These tags will be constant and physical reminder to offenders that the probation service can find out where they've been and when, and that they risk being sent to prison if they refuse to obey the rules. Under an amendment to the Criminal Justice Bill, if an offender is found guilty of assaulting staff 3 times or is sentenced for shoplifting on 3 separate occasions, they should be made to wear a tag as part of any community order. Ahead of this legislation coming in, the government will partner with the police force to pilot a bespoke package of community sentencing measures which can be used by judges to tackle high level of shoplifting, send a clear message to repeat criminality that this will not be tolerated. The government is also ramping up the use of facial recognition technology to help catch perpetrators and preventing shoplifting in the first place. We've covered that in depth also on another sister publication we've got, Security Matters and the Security Matters podcast. So if you're interested in the security sector, that's definitely a podcast and a publication for you. So going back onto that facial recognition technology, that's backed up by a $55.5 million investment over the next 4 years. The police will be able to further roll out this new state-of-the-art technology. This will include $4 million for bespoke mobile units that can be deployed from high streets across the country with live facial recognition used in crowded areas to identify people wanted by the police, including repeat offenders. So the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, has commented on this, and he says since 2010, violent and neighbourhood crime in England and Wales has fallen dramatically, showing our plan to keep the streets safe is working. That very much feels like we're into election season reading that. But yet, shoplifting and violence abuse towards retailers continues to rise. I'm sending a clear message to those criminals, whether they're serious organised criminal gangs, repeat offenders, or just opportunistic thieves who think they can get away with stealing and from local businesses or abusing shop workers, enough is enough. Our local shops are the lifeblood of our community, and they must be free to trade without the threat of crime or abuse. So I don't think anyone would disagree with strengthening these measures. There's obviously a multitude of things they're doing through strengthening this bill. And as I said many, many times on here, you have a right to go to work and come home safe. And that absolutely includes not the threat of violence towards you in your workplace. And obviously in this situation, we're talking about retailers. James Cleverly, who's the Home Secretary, has also commented on this. And he said there is quite simply no excuse for threatening behaviour or stealing, which can ruin other people's livelihoods and run it into the ground while being traumatic for workers. So I'm very supportive of measures like this. We should take tough action on crime. It's unacceptable. I don't want to talk about the stealing aspect here because it's not relevant so much to health and safety, but let's talk about here about the protection of workers. Absolutely. If you assault people in their workplace, you deserve the book thrown at you. And, you know, people that work in those environments, if you listen to this and you've got teams that do work in the retail aspect, which I know plenty of you listening to this do, then hopefully this is something that you support the strengthening of the laws. Always keen to hear your feedback on it. Give us feedback on social media using hashtag HSM podcast. So the next news story I've got for you is all about NEBOSH. And NEBOSH has appointed a trio of new trustees, and they have welcomed Laurie Cunningham, Linda Kennedy and Don Lloyd to its board of trustees. These appointments come as NEBOSH prepares to launch a new three-year strategy. And trust me, we will be covering that. And in fact, the guest on the next episode of the Health and Safety Matters podcast is the CEO of NEBOSH. So I suspect we will cover that at that point. But these new trustees will lend a particular experience to technology and people-focused programs, as well as complementing NEBOSH's core purpose of enabling workplaces to be safer and healthier. Laurie has extensive experience in digital strategy and transformation, and Linda is a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development and has over 37 years of HR experience. And Don is an established member of the health and safety community, having worked as group HSE director and senior vice president at three major multinational organizations, and is a former vice chair of Rosper actually as well. So commenting on these appointments, Rob Hull, who is the NEBOSH chair, said, "It's with great pleasure that we welcome Laurie, Linda and Don to NEBOSH's board of trustees, and it's an exciting time to join us as NEBOSH prepares to embark on a new three-year strategy. Each new trustee brings a wealth of experience in their field, as well as experience of working with international organisations. This is particularly relevant as NEBOSH welcomes learners from more than 150 countries and has ambitions to develop our international impact even further." So, yeah, only thing to add to that, we always like to give a little bit update on, you know, moves in the sector. And, yeah, congratulations to Laurie, Linda and Don, and we wish them all the best in their role. You know, we work very closely with NEBOSH, and in fact, as many of you may know, we're actually doing a conference alongside NEBOSH's conference on the 27th of June. Our conference is Health and Safety Matters Live. It takes place at the Coventry Building Society Arena on the 27th of June, as I said, completely free to attend. You can register to attend at hsmlive.co.uk. NEBOSH will be doing an alumni conference alongside us. We're expecting over 500 people to come to this day. It's a great day. I mean, there's no reason not to come. It's a full day of CPD. You'll get CPD certificate for attending. There's over 40 exhibitors. You get a free lunch, free parking, free Wi-Fi, free cloakroom. Everything is on us in that situation. And there's a train station on site as well if you want to travel by public transport. That's the Coventry Building Society Arena, the formerly known as the Rico Arena, the home of Coventry City Football Club. But if you're looking for reasons to come, well, looking at the seminars, we've got an opening address from the Health and Safety Executive. We have got a session, a really interesting one actually, on the introduction of AI into the world of health and safety. We've talked about the adequacy of stress risk assessments. We've got a session on sustainability and hand protection. Reducing workplace injury with an ergonomic safety technology is a session as well. How to create good practice for driving at work. That's a really key session being delivered by Driving for Better Business. Taking the risk out of specifying PPE safety equipment, that'll be another key session following on the back of what we talked about, non-compliant PPE earlier. Lessons learned from recent health and safety case law will be delivered by DAC Beechcroft, leading lawyers in the health and safety sector. And then we've got a session that we know you'll all enjoy, and that is a health and safety mock trial where you, the audience, will actually be the jury. It is based on a real-life prosecution, and effectively, the case is put out in front of you as though it was the court case, and then we throw over to you to say guilty or not guilty, and once that verdict is delivered, then we actually say what the real life verdict was, whether it was guilty or not guilty, and share the lessons learned from that and why they either were or weren't guilty. So that is something you can absolutely take into your workplace with you. It's always jam-packed. As I said, all of this is completely free, and it takes place on the 27th of June in Coventry. If you're looking for suppliers, we've got all the big names there. Casella are there, B-Swift, Blackline Safety, Draeger, Eco Online are there. We've got JSP, the headline sponsors, RS. We've got Lakeland. We've got Martor, Moldex, Minuendo. We have got Resmar on the training side. Safety Rocks are there. Uniglubs and Gore-Tex are there. The Safety Knife Company, Tilsa Tech. Nebosch are obviously there as well, and DuPont, and I could go on and on and on, and the British Safety Industry Federation will also be there with a stand. So great place if you've got training needs, if you've got procurement needs for health and safety products, or you just want guidance. It's the place to go, with the Health and Safety Executive being there with a stand as well, BSIF being there. It is the place to go, and it is the 27th of June, completely free to attend at www.hsmlive.co.uk. So please do come along, and I'm looking forward to seeing you all there. So please do give your feedback on the podcast. As I've said, go on social media, use the hashtag HSM podcast. But what we do after the news, if you're new to the podcast, is we always invite a guest onto the podcast. And I had a really interesting conversation on this episode with Trevor Bronson, who's the Director of Portfolio Strategy at Intellex. And we've done a number of webinars with Intellex that you can watch for free on our website, hsmsearch.com, and click on the webinars tab. But we were just talking really broadly about health and safety, because Trevor's so knowledgeable. And some of the topics that we cover now are what's changed in health and safety, in Trevor's opinion, over the last 5 years, what should be a focus for health and safety professionals over the coming months and years, and the impact of technology on the world of health and safety. So it was a really interesting conversation. We were both in different parts of the world when we did it, so technology held up, thankfully, which is the strength of this podcast. And so I sat down with Trevor, and here's what he had to say. Hi Trevor, how are things with you?
Yeah, not too bad, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, good. We've got a truly international podcast today. You're in the States and I'm over in Spain working at the moment. So whereabouts in the States are you based as we speak?
Well, I'm based in New York City, but right now I happen to be coming to you from cloudy Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's been sunny, a lot more similar to Spain the last 2 days. Today I can't say the same.
Well, I'm really delighted to get you on the podcast. I've got a fair few questions I want to get through, so let's get cracking then. So the first question I had for you is, what's changed in health and safety in the last 5 years, in your opinion, and what hasn't changed?
There's been a lot of change in an EHS, health and safety broadly, in the past 5 years. I've been working on some materials around this, talking about the accelerating pace of change, which I can start off with to answer this question. Over the past, let's rewind further, maybe 30 years, right? EHS is a discipline, has evolved, but it's been a slow evolution because things have been happening not necessarily at the same time as other things. Of course, you always have change in regulations. They come and go, they get more stringent, they get more lax, changes in administrations, changes in regulatory bodies, et cetera. That's been a slow tick, right? Always kind of trending the same direction, but none of those regulations have necessarily been step changes or paradigm shifters in how it's done. Just another thing to think about as you go about your job, as you make sure your operations are compliant. You've had some change in the mandate of the EHS professional broadly. So EHS started off way back as kind of, it was actually called industrial hygiene way back in the day. The regulations came out, you started talking about EH and ES individually. They kind of merged into one EHS department. You had EHS then go into things like it was at some companies, EHS and security, or maybe it was EHS and sustainability, or we saw some companies mix quality in there because the workflows are the same. Right now you have, I think the biggest trend to think about in EHS when it comes to what the role is covering are two things. Sustainability is turning into ESG. And while those may sound similar, I think the stark difference that I want to call out to anyone listening is ESG comes with a much sharper and bigger set of teeth than sustainability ever did. Sustainability, for all intents and purposes, was a marketing exercise where you could kind of say what you needed to say, what you felt you wanted to say, what you could prove or not. No one was checking you on it. Now with rules like the recent SEC rule in the States or CSRD over in the EU, in Europe, there are actual penalties for saying things that are not true. And when you bring up a claim and want to show that you're doing all of these things, you have to prove it kind of, you know, or else. So that's changing EHS because we increasingly see EHS departments have some level of responsibility for ESG, especially, right? CSRD requests so much information and data. Not all of that information has to do with EHS, but a decent portion of it does. While the EHS department may not have responsibility for submitting that report and ensuring compliance, they absolutely have responsibility for feeding some of the data into the area where it all gets aggregated to then submit and show compliance. So that's one thing changing right now in EHS. Two, the S of EHS is getting bigger and bolder and italicized, if you will. It doesn't just mean acute workplace safety anymore. You're seeing a lot more focus on things like total worker health. You're seeing focus on mental well-being. You're seeing a focus on things like psychological safety. It is not simply avoiding my workers from getting hit by a speeding forklift or, you know, crushed or pinched in the area of the plant or tripping over a cord. You are trying to make sure your workers are fundamentally healthy, not just safe, but healthy. And healthy is a much bigger scope, yet the EHS department is having responsibility for that. And the third thing that's changing is the technology that we have to manage EHS. So people have gone from pen and paper to basic software to purpose-built workflow software. Now, with the onset and the availability of some AI tools and ways in which people are thinking about how you can manipulate data and combine EHS data sets with other data sets in your organization, whether that be through using a data lake or something like that, you're seeing EHS professionals thinking about or needing to start thinking about how they can use available technologies to drive outcomes. We've heard a lot about safety plateaus, right? Like people do as much as they can. They kind of try to optimize their management system. They use what's in front of them and they do well. They improve their metrics, but at some point you kind of can't figure out how to go above and beyond it. I think that's what new technology is going to enable if used right. So all of those things, back to my original point to bring this full circle, all of those things on their own would just kind of represent the next evolution in safety in EHS. Sustainability to ESG, CS, new regulations, new technology, that's all happening at one time basically right now and over the past 5 years. So that's why the change is accelerating. What hasn't changed really though, we're still trying to accomplish the same goal we were. You need to ensure compliance. That's it. That's in the job description. You need to reduce risk. You need to get people to embrace the safety culture. It's just that you have all these new considerations, these new tools to do it. So you have to think about how you can do that. Go ahead.
So if health and safety leaders were to focus on just one thing in the next year, what do you think that would be?
Yeah. with all that said, if you're going to focus on one thing, I would certainly be taking stock of your tech stack, of the situation you have at your disposal to manage these things, how you see that moving forward for the EHS function, and how you see that more broadly fitting into your company's kind of portfolio of technologies or your broader digital strategy. You need to be aware of what's out there, what's available to you. Because there are so many things available, you need to be aware what can actually drive value, what makes sense for your organization. Look at it this way. The best EHS department isn't the one that has the most technology. It's the one that has the right technology for their needs to meet their goals. So you have to think about that in terms of your own company. You're always paying attention to regs, but you're it's disingenuous to say pay attention to the next year, because you need to pay attention every year. You're always going to be thinking about what your role is evolving into, but that is also a moving target. This current kind of boom in technology, if you will, the accessibility of it, the kinds of things that are out there, this is happening right now and is new. So I encourage people to try to get a handle on that as soon as they can and deal with the rest.
Well, obviously, Intellex is at the cutting edge of technology in the health and safety sector. And I kind of want to go on to question about that now. What do you see as the impact on technology on the world of health and safety today and in the near future?
It's just, I mean, I mentioned the whole getting over the plateau thing, if done right, but it's just letting people do more with what they have, right? EHS has grown into be a very data-based discipline. We're always spinning off more and more data, always trying to collect more data, whether that be from inputs from your frontline workers in way of observations or near misses, or maybe it's inputs from environmental sensors, when you're thinking about things like temperature or automatic noise sensors, or it doesn't matter. There's a ton of data coming in. And the job for the EHS professional, at least the modern day EHS professional, is to make sense of that data and find which data has relationships other data sets so that you can find what you can do to materially impact change and drive positive outcomes. So that technology is letting us do that easier. At a certain point, a human or even a group of humans just don't have the time, don't have the bandwidth. You have other things to do. The job, and I've spent time as an EHS practitioner a couple times over, the day-to-day is very focusing on the problem of the day, the inspection you need to do that day, the permit that's due that day, the report that needs to be filed that day, the accident that happened that day. Letting technology do all of this work in the background to either collect data in, you know, maybe it's a company that does CCTV kind of hazard identification. Maybe it's a sensor. The job of technology to analyze and assess the important things surrounding that data. So now we're talking about kind of machine learning and looking at relationships and big data sets in those data lakes. Let the technology do that so that you as the EHS manager can deal with that day-to-day stuff that will always exist. But when you're not dealing with that day-to-day stuff, instead of sitting here grinding on this data, you can be thinking strategically. You can look at what the data is already trying to tell you with these new technologies, or the data you're getting that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise with these new technologies, and action it. In my experience, that's what EHS managers want to do. They want to be strategic. They want to drive improvements. They want to think about how to optimize their program. All the day-to-day stuff just unfortunately can get in the way of that. Use technology to eliminate that hurdle to the best you can.
So how does compliance, success or failure, affect wider organizational objectives, such as, you know, recruiting, sales, or shareholder value, the brand, the financial or operational performance? What's your take on that, Trevor?
Compliance is foundational. If you, an EHS professional, manager, director, VP, associate, what have you, are not ensuring that your company is in compliance with the rules and regulations it needs to be in compliance with, you won't last there very long. That is the bottom line. Of all the things you cannot afford to mess up, you cannot mess up compliance. Everything else, I don't want to say it's icing on the cake, because that's an important part of the job too. But if you're not doing compliance, they'll find someone that does. So to that end, you know, small little compliance misses are going to happen. It's really hard to maintain 100% compliance. It is certainly an aspirational goal that every company should be hoping to achieve, but it's tricky. Little compliance misses here and there are going to happen. It's not going to be a huge burden on anything your company is trying to do. But if you mess up something really big, something publicly facing, something that you know is going to get you a lot of negative attention in the media, that can affect things a lot, and it's only going to affect things more and more. Danford had some research that I believe they took from the employment website Glassdoor that said in 2024, Gen Z is forecasted to replace baby boomers as the second most represented generation in the workforce, at least in the States. I'm guessing the same is generally true across the world, just because that's how people work. So this is to say that, right, that generation of folks have a different way of looking at work, and have a different way of looking at companies, and have a different thing they want to get out of their professional career. So if you're in the news with a huge compliance miss, doing really bad by your employees in terms of safety, doing really bad by the environment, looting something, breaking a permit, taking water from someplace you shouldn't be. That affects the talent you get, because the best people, or a lot of the best people, won't want to come work at that company. So compliance can be kind of benign, but the worse the miss is and the more public the miss is, the more you're going to risk and ultimately the more you're going to lose out on. So no one ever wanted to get a fine or a penalty. That stands, that will stay true forever. But these more indirect costs of compliance are coming to fruition, coming home to roost, and they'll only become more consequential as time goes on and as you're catering to a new generation of worker.
And going on from that, what are the key metrics that every health and safety team should be measuring, and how often should these be reviewed?
It depends. Like all great questions, the answer is it depends. We've heard a lot about leading and lagging indicators in the EHS world. Both of those are important. You need to be able to say, hey, we're improving performance on our lost time incident rate, on anything that tells you really how you're doing, that you're going to report to a regulator, you know, fatality rate, things like that. Those are important. You need to measure those, because ultimately that is how you determine that the things you're doing are successful or not. You need to be managing leading indicators. Now, there's a range of leading indicators. You need to pick the ones that are right for your organization. That could be training competency. That could be closing out investigations on near misses. It could be an observation program. It could be proactive inspections or audits. It could be a lot of things. You will have to figure out what the right mix is for the goals you're trying to achieve. But I also encourage people to try to think about how they can measure kind of safety culture at their organizations. And safety culture is a huge topic that everyone likes to talk about, but it can get a little fuzzy because it means different things to different people. I like to define safety culture, or I like to prove safety culture by saying, look, at some point during your company's operations, there's going to be some employee that it's going to have to make some choice. And the choice comes down to, I need to get this thing done quickly and right now, or I need to make a safe choice that's going to jeopardize the outcome I'm trying to achieve, the production target I'm trying to hit, the what have you. You know, I can either get out of here right now, or I can get out of here 30 minutes later back home and do it the safe way. You need to make sure that that employee in that moment, when they have a clear choice to make, is going to make the safe choice, and that they feel empowered to make that safe choice. Because remember, you, the EHS vice president, are always going to be talking about safety culture and be a champion of safety culture. People expect that. But those people that you're trying to talk to that ultimately make that decision don't answer generally to the EHS VP. They answer to their line manager. They answer to their shift supervisor. So unless everyone up that chain within the company is going to empower the people under them to make the safe choice, your safety culture isn't there, or at least it's only as good as its weakest link. Because if that supervisor cares more about the production goals for that day than they do than you doing it safely, you are probably going to just do it the quick way, because that is who you're answering to. So thinking about metrics to measure the effectiveness of that could be just simple conformance to policy, could be pulse reports, you know, surveys of the workforce. There's a handful of ways to do it. I encourage people to think about metrics that allow them to get a handle on where that is in their organization.
And how do the outcomes of the health and safety function, so successes and failures, impact the corporate brand and the bottom line, in your opinion?
We talked a bit about corporate brand, right? If you're in the news for anything EHS, generally no one makes the news for good EHS, unfortunately. Maybe that will change in the future. But if you're in the news for bad EHS, that can really impact how people look at your brand, the talent you're able to obtain, how people buy from you, or what choice they make. So that's not great. When it comes to safety, you also, especially if you're a contractor, so you're working for, you know, a larger company, and many people are somewhere in some other company's supply chain. Increasingly, you're seeing a lot of attention paid to the resiliency and EHS of it all in the supply chain. You were already doing this before COVID, but especially after COVID, when supply chains really got disrupted there for a while and arguably still are very disrupted. If you're doing your due diligence on a potential supplier, you're working with a potential contractor you're working with, and you as the contractor have been in the news or had poor performance that's at least logged on the regulator's websites that says we've had a fatality or we've had this accident or we didn't accomplish this thing on time because of an EHS miss, you're realistically going to lose business. I mean, that will directly impact your bottom line because people want to work with people they know are going to be safe and not impact their own operations. So EHS performance is getting more and more scrutiny from more and more stakeholders. That means every screw up has more and more potential to impact your business moving forward. Not to sound all doom and gloom or scare people, but it is kind of scary. And I hope that people were already doing EHS for all the right reasons, but if they needed another reason or another set of reasons, the scrutiny is the reason.
And how can businesses demonstrate the value of health and safety? And what would you advise they do as a matter of urgency?
They can demonstrate the value of health and safety. It depends on the audience, right? We just spoke about the different stakeholders that this value needs to be shown to. In terms of the bottom line, you would hope to see value in positive health and safety performance, looking at positive business performance. It may, at certain organizations, be hard to make that correlation, but it can certainly be there. Again, especially if you're a smaller organization that's a contractor, you want to show the value to your employees in how happy effectively your employees are at work. This can come through retention metrics. This can come through the surveys you do just to get a feel for what people are thinking about when they're at the company and they feel taken care of. And if they would recommend this company to a friend, if they're recruiting their friends to come work there, right? If they want to, they're proud to be associated with the company. And then you can show the value in health and safety to potential shareholders with CSRD, for example, or any other ESG guidelines, frameworks. There is data that suggests a stronger ESG performance, of which we talked about in the beginning of the call. EHS goes into that in a major way, allows you to have better access to capital, which if you have access to capital, you can do things to grow the business and make more value, right? And answer those same shareholders. So there's a number of ways to think about proving the value of EHS. And that's why it's exciting to be in EHS right now. It's always been a cost center. Oh God, we got to do that. Oh man, I don't want to get a fine. Like, oh, I wish we could work faster, but gosh darn EHS, it's just what we have to do. Now there's ways in which positive EHS performance drives competitive advantages, drives dividends, in some cases, literal dividends. That's cool. It can elevate the role of the EHS professional. It means the EHS professional can sit at tables maybe they weren't previously able to sit at, invited to meetings they never got the invite to. It's an exciting time, combined with all the technology and all that. It's a dynamic time, an exciting time. And for the right EHS professional, there's a lot of opportunity right now.
And for those that aren't aware of your organization that you work for, Intellect, can you tell us a bit more about what Intellect can offer on the health and safety side?
Yeah, absolutely. So Intellect is an environment, health, safety, sustainability. We also do some quality software company. We were founded in 1992, so we've been around for 32 years now. We are based in Toronto, Canada. We have offices in the US. We have offices in the UK. We have other offices around the globe. We are owned by a company called Fortive, which owns a couple of other industrial operating companies. And I say all this to preface what we do is we sell and create world-class environment, health and safety software, first and foremost. It covers all the workflows that any EHS professional would need. We really over-rotate on democratizing the use of EHS software, focusing on the frontline workers, for focusing on engagement. I spoke earlier in the call about safety culture. I think safety culture can be driven by making sure everyone has a stake in the safety program and the ability to influence the safety program. That means engagement with the technology tools you have, or at least that's Intellect's tact. So that's something we really try to focus on, you know, the user experience of all that. And look, we're always trying to innovate. We've spoken a lot about technology on this call, looking at the ways in which we can use analytics, looking at the ways we can make your data work for you. You know, we have an integration and a partnership with Snowflake, but looking at ways we can incorporate world-class technology. We have an integration with a couple of those CCTV companies, one based over in your side of the Atlantic, a company called Protex AI out of Ireland. We have a couple of these integrations. We try to make sure our customers are getting maximum value from our software. Maximum value means that our software is able to solve their problems. That Intellect is but a tool for a job. We want to make sure we're the best tool for the job, and we want to stay on top of how that job evolves. So that's NLX. That was kind of a lot of words to answer that question. World-class EHS software, if you have to take one thing away.
And if people want to find out more about Intellects, is there a website they can go to, or social media? What's the best way to get in touch with Intellects and also get in touch with you direct?
Yeah, so Intellects has all the things you'd expect us to have. Website, we're on all the socials, you know, LinkedIn, we have an Instagram account, we're everywhere. You can go to our website, certainly learn more, click around. We offer a lot, so it's a big website, but go around and look if you can find things that are relevant to you. We have a bunch of case studies on there. We have some ROI calculators if you want to see what Intellects can actually do for you in terms of saving money and improving that ROI, showing that value we just talked about. So certainly learn more that way. We have a number of webinars like in the podcast we're doing right now that people can watch and kind of, you know, think about while they're eating lunch. If you want to get in touch with me, you can reach out to me through LinkedIn. I'm always happy to have a chat on anything EHS. That's happened a number of times after conversations like this I'm having with you, Mark, and I always really appreciate that follow-up. So if people were interested in anything I said here, want to hear more about it, I'm happy to continue the conversation on LinkedIn.
And I can, you know, follow that up by saying, you know, we work closely with Intellects and we've done webinars with you in the past, which are always great and informative. And, you know, we did one as recently as the 12th of March on the 5 elements of a successful data-driven safety culture. And you can, that was with Scott Gaddis, who's been a previous guest on this podcast as well. So if you want to go and watch that, get yourself a CPD certificate, it's completely free to do so. Just go to the HSM website, throw into a search engine, Health and Safety Matters, or go to hsmsearch.com and click on the webinars tab in the main navigation. And that was a really good session. So I'd strongly urge people to watch that on demand. Well, Trevor, that was a really enjoyable conversation, really thorough. Thank you for all of your time. We really appreciate it.
Mark, the pleasure is all mine. Happy to have this conversation. Love talking about this stuff. And I hope everyone listening found it useful and interesting.
And my thanks to Trevor for joining us on an episode of the podcast. And that's all we've got time for on this edition. But as I've always said, you can go on our website anytime to get all the latest news, prosecutions, products and services in the health and safety sector. It is www.hsmsearch.com or throw into a search engine Health and Safety Matters that we come. And going to the website can give you much more than that. You can see all of our archived editions of the magazine and you can sign up to get the magazine for free. You can also look at all of our upcoming webinars and look at all of our past webinars on demand for free on there or sign up to our weekly e-newsletter as well. So all of that is on hsmsearch.com. I'd also like to thank once again our sponsors of this podcast, which is the Health and Safety event. And as I've said, that takes place this week. It takes place on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. We are recording that. That's tomorrow as I air this today. From the 30th of April to the 2nd of May 2024, the NEC in Birmingham. It's completely free to attend. Your pass will also give you access to the fire safety event, the security event, and the workplace event. They're expecting over 45,000 professionals across all of those events. There's over 200 health and safety exhibitors there. And that includes us, Health and Safety Matters, and we're also education partner there for the main conference. So come and see us. We've got a joint stand with the BSIF. HSM BSIF have got a stand together. Come and see us there. But in the meantime, give us any feedback you want on the podcast, on social media, using hashtag HSM Podcast. Please give us a review on whatever podcast platform that you're on. We always appreciate that as well, and you give us a star rating on there. But in the meantime, do go to our website, as I said, www.hsmsearch.com, and do come and join us on the 27th of June at Health and Safety Matters Live. Completely free to attend. We talked about it earlier. It's in the Coventry Building Society Arena, and you can register free at www.hsmlive.co.uk. So thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the next episode of the Health and Safety Matters podcast.